He said that he was going to come and find me. It was really freaky. He terrified me.
I watched the police pick the guy up and put him into a patrol car. He was screaming and kicking the whole way. I've never seen anything like it.
You have to come home. Something is going on that I can't explain. Please call me immediately.
I'm going to be honest with you. When I first began with episode 1 of my exploration into the disappearance of Alistair Glamis, I thought he probably died in the woods 20 years ago. Or maybe his father killed him. I was more interested in the strange things he left behind for me. It was a selfish move to create the podcast at all. At best, I suspected the show would lead to a fanciful study of the troubled mind of a teenager coming of age at the end of the millennium. At worst, this show would be the boring ramblings of a middle-aged man trying to get a grip on the past. That was the plan. And perhaps I should have been clearer with my listeners about my preconceived notions. What I did not expect is what is actually happening. This twisted path that presented itself to me and my friends and family, the ramifications my investigation has had on the people I care about. I am so sorry. I wish I could go back to the way things were before, but, and this is the most terrifying part, there's no going back. This is the Disappearance Podcast, Episode 6, The Game. I had been staying in my old hometown of Barton, New Hampshire, in the home of Ricky Rawls, next door to my old childhood home, for 2 nights, when I finally called Tom Allegost. He had been leaving me increasingly urgent voicemail messages. As much as I wanted to talk to him, I just couldn't bring myself to do it. I knew that answering his call would lead me to continuing down a path that I was no longer interested in going. I needed to stop, the audio project, I mean. I needed to take a break. I've been recording everything around me. And for lack of a better explanation, I will just say up front that I no longer care about the disappearance of Alistair Glamis. Well, at least I didn't at that moment. My project had gone off the rails. My primary focus, my only focus, even now, is my friend Ricky Rawls, who, after announcing that he had suddenly gone blind in one eye, spooked an elementary school teacher, and allegedly burned down the Barton Public Library. And there's more to come. So much more.
Tom told me that whatever he has to tell you is for you alone. You alone.
That's my wife, Carol. Before I called Tom back, I called her one more time. I think I was looking for an escape. A reason not to continue.
I spoke to Julie about it too, and she said that Tom has been in his studio for days with your recordings. He's acting very odd.
I know. I need to call him back. Immediately. But I just can't. Did he tell you what he found?
No. He was acting very strange with me too. He just focused on me convincing you to call him. Julie sounded worried. Please, just call him, John. Call him for me, even if you're giving up on this whole thing.
Okay, I'll call him.
And then I think you should come home. That's real concern you hear in my voice. I don't know what's happening, but I don't have a good feeling about any of this. Just come home, okay?
Okay. I'm gonna have to get a cat carrier of some kind, and I'll come back.
Are you recording this right now?
Let's just say that Carol was also ready for me to take a break from the project. But I would have to break my promise to her. As I was about to find out, there was more in northern New Hampshire for me to do. But first, here's that call I made to Tom Allegost.
Hello, Tom. This is John.
I know. I saw your number.
Sorry I didn't call you back immediately. There's just been a lot of stuff going on with Ricky.
I heard. Did you find his cat?
Yeah, the cat is fine. I'm actually staying in Ricky's house. So what did you find?
It's really something I shouldn't share for the podcast.
Shouldn't share? Do you want me to stop recording?
No. I don't know. The whole thing is messed up. I just think I need to talk it out with you.
Okay. Do you want to send me the recording?
No, I don't think you should ever listen to it.
What do you mean?
Even talking about it is... I don't know. Like I said, the whole thing is messing with me. It's a mind trip.
What is it, Tom?
At first, I only uncovered a little bit. Enough to confirm that it was someone speaking. It was a kid. A teenager. He was reciting more poetry, just like Sam Glamis. I worked at it in pieces. It took me a long time, but finally I pulled it all together, and I played it back. I think it's some kind of guided hypnosis.
Hypnosis?
I think so. Like I said, he seems to be reciting a poem, but I don't know how to describe it. He's telling a story about the past, and the effect is very meditative. I think maybe that might be what's happening to your friend, too.
You think Ricky is hypnotized? How do you know?
I spoke to myself.
What?
I was sitting in my studio. I was feeling very strange, and there was a noise behind me. It made my skin feel all prickly. I turned, and there he was.
Who?
It was me. I was standing there. It was like I was watching a video of myself. Except I was really standing there. For real. It wasn't fun or interesting or cool. It was terrifying.
Have you told Julie about this?
No. Listen, there's more. He spoke to me first. Do you want to know what I said?
Sure, Tom. What did you say?
I said, he needs to stay away from Barton, or else you will be like me. That was it. That's all he said. I tried to say something back, but I was so scared. I just said, please go away. That's when I realized that the recording had stopped. I had been listening to it the whole time.
And you believe this was a hallucination brought on by hypnosis?
Induced by the recording. Yeah, I don't know what else to believe. I definitely got pretty anxious when I heard you and Barton. I freaked out, especially after you didn't respond to my phone call. I'm sorry.
Before we ended our call, Tom announced that he was taking a break from the investigation. And he was nervous about breaking it to me. He shared some things about how the past few days have affected his personal life that I will not be including in this episode. I did tell Tom that I was considering the same, a break I mean. Maybe just for a month. This made him feel better. Tom and Julie are going on a mini vacation to clear his mind. And I wish them the best. As for the possibility that Tom was hypnotized by one of Alistair Glamis's recordings, I'm not sure what to say. His whole revelation is chilling, and I feel wrong questioning its validity. I'm not really certain that hypnosis is a real thing. In fact, I went back to Ricky's house and spent an hour idly clicking on websites, trying to find out whether or not what he described was even possible. For old time's sake, here's what I learned. While traces of what can be described as hypnosis can be found throughout history, our modern view of hypnosis began to take shape in the 1770s with an Austrian physician named Franz Mesmer. This is where we get the term mesmerism and mesmerized. Mesmer had some strange medical theories. He believed that the tidal influences of the planets altered the human body through a universal force, which he called animal magnetism. He cured a famous concert pianist named Marie Theresa Parody. And get this, her ailment was sudden onset blindness. As the story goes, the cure was not approved by her parents, who stood to lose a royal pension if their daughter's blindness disappeared. She was forcibly and reportedly violently removed from Mesmer's house, where she'd been staying to receive his unique mind and magnetism treatments. Later, the young woman's blindness returned, and Mesmer was accused of being a fake. His bad reputation as a fraud has lingered, attaching itself to hypnosis as well. Even nowadays, it gets a bad rap. But there are many cases of hypnosis helping people with all kinds of maladies. And researchers in Sweden and Finland, as recently as a few years ago, found that hypnotic suggestion can modify processing of a targeted stimulus before it reaches consciousness. What that means is that it can make you see things, hallucinate. During my bout of research, call it a weak moment from someone who just can't let go of this project, I happened to check my email. I had been avoiding it as much as I was avoiding everything else. There were several messages from work, as well as several from listeners. Mostly the listeners were offering their thoughts on episode 2. It appears that particular episode has sparked some imagination. One person actually asked whether my audio project was fake. Really. Fake. As you can gather, I haven't been very good at responding lately. One message caught my eye, though. It was from the eBay user that I messaged weeks ago asking about a book they were selling. Let me remind you. The book was The Incredible Being by Samuel Badeley, which appears to be the name that Sam Glamis used to purchase land in Barton. I wasn't sure it was the same Sam Badeley, but after a brief email exchange, I was convinced. You see, the eBay user was in Barton, New Hampshire. I messaged Carol, texted her, telling her I wasn't coming home until very late. I was so desperate to interview this guy, and he said he'd meet me down at the High Street Tavern that night. Carol told me to come home. She wanted me to let it go. She repeated my own words back at me, but I just couldn't. Not yet. So first of all, could you introduce yourself by name?
Yeah, sure. My name is Josh Strickens.
And I really feel like it's a crazy coincidence that you live in Barton, New Hampshire. We discussed over email that I have been doing an audio project centered around Barton. And I'm in Barton right now, which I haven't visited in many years.
I do live in Barton. I've lived here my whole life. And I remember you from school. You were 2 years behind me?
Right. It's wild that you're selling this book. For me, for my project, it's an amazing artifact. So, where did you come across this book?
Look, let's just say that there were a lot of them lying around, and I only took a few.
What do you mean you took them?
That's my business. I had an opportunity and I took them. But I have a question for you.
You do?
Yeah. I've listened to your show. I'm like your number one fan.
You're kidding me. See, the coincidences that I've been involved in with this project have been ridiculous.
Coincidence has nothing to do with it. You were his friend, weren't you?
Yeah. I guess you heard about the library. I'm really close with Ricky Rawls, and I don't know what's going on.
I'm not talking about him. I mean Alistair, Sam Glamis' kid. You two were best friends, weren't you?
Oh, no. If you listened to the show, then you know that I barely knew him.
That's not true. That's not true at all.
I don't understand what you mean. I was not friends with Alistair Glamis.
I don't know what you two did together, but it wasn't pretty. I want you to know that you are not the only one. I can see through you, Johnson. People have been buying that book.
I have no idea what you're talking about. And it's John, by the way.
Think about it. People have been buying the book. Just kidding with you, man. If you want one of those books, I'll give one to you. But I wouldn't read it if I were you.
Why not?
I guess because you'd lose your damn mind, right? Just kidding. Look, you should see your face. Here's some advice. Loosen up. Like I said, I'm your number one fan. A toast to you.
After speaking with Josh Strickens, I rushed back to Ricky's house with every intention to pack the cat into the car somehow and drive straight home. But I noticed a message on my phone. I had silenced the phone during my conversation with Josh Strickens. The message was from Ricky's father. I learned that Ricky was being transferred to a prison in Berlin, New Hampshire, which is about an hour south of Barton. They asked, or rather begged me, if I would go and visit him. They begged me to go immediately. They said that they couldn't imagine their son in a real prison. They needed to know that he was okay. I agreed. I called Carol. It was late. She was already in bed.
I knew you weren't coming home. I knew it in my heart.
I'm just gonna spend the night. Close up the house. Then Soda and I are going to drive to Berlin. I'll check on Ricky, and I'll come home. I'm not even sure he's allowed visitors. It'll be a quick stop.
Are you just going to leave the cat in the car?
I guess so. I'm gonna find a box. I'll keep it in there.
That's not how you're supposed to treat an animal. Promise me you'll come home afterwards. For real this time. I'm not sure a quick stop at the state prison makes me very comfortable.
Needless to say, Carol was not happy with the plan. The next morning, when I arrived at the prison, I was shocked by the sheer size of it. It looked more like a prison from the movies than what I expected. It even had the high fences and barbed wire. When I checked in, I was told that I would only have a few minutes with Ricky. I was brought into a waiting room where I sat for a good half hour. Finally, I was led to a long room separated by tables and glass. The glass was partitioned by what reminded me of study booths in a library. Each little booth had an old-fashioned phone receiver resting in a carriage. I was led by a prison guard to one of those booths, where I sat for another stretch of time. Finally, they brought out Ricky. Honestly, while Ricky and I are regularly in touch, I hadn't really seen him in a long time. He visited Carol and I 6 months ago at our home. He was just passing through on his way to a cousin's wedding in Connecticut. Looking at him behind the glass, I would have said it had been a much longer time since I had seen him. He looked older. He looked tired.
I lost Johnny.
You lost what?
The game man. And now you lose too.
Yeah, you got me.
He had a wild look about his eyes. Both of them. I couldn't even tell which eye was now blind. Ricky looked at me through the glass with an expression that I find difficult to describe. He seemed anxious. Ricky is never anxious. Frankly, he's one of the most chill dudes I've ever known. Back when Ricky and I were young, there was this popular game that we used to play with each other. It was simply called The Game. Ricky and I loved to play The Game. There were only four rules. It went as follows. Rule number one, everyone in the world is playing the game. This means that we are technically playing the game right now. Rule number two, a person cannot choose to not play. In fact, it is impossible to stop playing. Rule number three, whenever one thinks about the game, one loses. So technically, everyone listening to this podcast episode right now has just lost the game. Sorry about that. The next round starts as soon as you forget about it, I suppose. Well, there's one more thing. The final rule. Rule number four. Losses must be announced. So yes, Ricky said he lost the game. I just lost the game. You did too. Back to my conversation with Ricky.
What's going on here? What happened to you?
It's the million-dollar question. What happened to me? How about this? What happened to you?
I understand that he had been through a lot, but I didn't expect him to strike out at me. I took a breath and tried to reason with him.
I can't help but think that this is more than just your blindness. Something's going on with you. I want to help. Did I do something wrong?
Why don't you go ask Talia?
Who?
Talia.
Who's Talia?
Why don't you take a month off from the podcast? That's what you do, right? You never make it past 6 episodes. I've listened to 30 or 40 episodes at this point. You never quite figure it out, man. Well, some of you do. When does it end, Johnny?
Ricky, I don't think you're thinking straight. I talked to Sally.
What?
At the mention of Sally, Ricky jumped out of his chair and pressed himself against the glass that separated us. A guard approached and yelled something that I couldn't understand through the phone. Ricky sat back down. His face was red. He said something to the guard that made him back off. He settled down low in his chair and picked up the phone again.
What did she say?
What did you expect her to say? She doesn't know you.
Ricky got a strange look on his face. It was as if all emotion was drained from him. He sank even lower into his chair. He then leaned forward and spoke.
Do you have it?
Yeah. I couldn't find anywhere to put him. He's in my car right now. Carol and I will take care of him.
What are you talking about?
The cat.
What cat?
Soda.
I'm talking about the key.
The post office key?
Yes. You should use it.
You want me to go to the Barton post office and look into other people's mailboxes?
No. Listen to me. You are coming. You started this. You've already lost the game, Johnny. I met him, you know. Just briefly, but I looked right into his eyes.
Whose eyes? I don't know who you're talking about.
Your best friend.
And that's when they called time up. Honestly, it was a big relief to me because nothing Ricky was saying was making any sense. I have spoken with several officials at the prison. I will repeat to you what I told them. I don't think Ricky should be there. It is clear that he has suffered some kind of mental breakdown. I don't know what the medical term for whatever it is he's experiencing, but he is not well. He doesn't deserve to be behind bars. He needs help. And I want you all to know that I'm really taking a break now. Just a month. I need to step away. And finally, I need you to know that I'm recording this last bit of narration at home. I went home directly, just like I said.
Stars shining bright above you. Night breezes seem to whisper, I love you. Birds singing in a sycamore tree. Dream a little dream of me. Say nighty night and kiss me. Just hold me tight and tell me you miss me. While I'm alone and blue as can be, dream a little dream of me.
Soda the cat and I are back home with Carol, but, and I feel comfortable admitting this now, something is calling to me. Something Ricky said. Of all the things Ricky said. I told Carol, and I'm telling you now, between now and the next time you hear my voice, I'm making one more trip up to Barton. I'm going to the Barton post office. I have to. I can't let it go. Until next time. Thanks to Tom Allegost, Josh Strickens, Ricky Rawls, and my wife Carol for making this episode possible. Thanks to everyone who has told a friend about this project. Word is spreading thanks to you. Thanks also to Ben von Wildenhaus, Rudy Sims, and Prom Queen for providing the music. Finally, thanks to Sean Crapo, Ryan Fitton, and Jeremy Murphy for the support. This show is a co-production with Partners in Crime Media. Let's talk in 1 month.
Partners in Crime Media.